good afternoon. This is Read Me Something You Love. And I am sitting in the lovely book-lined flat of Wayne Goodham today. Nice and cosy flat, and I'm aware of the coziness because it's been tipping down outside. So it's quite nice coming into a cosy space for a nice literary chat, a cup of coffee. I brought some biscuits. Wayne, for those who don't know him, is a freelance journalist and a writer. When I contacted you and said, please, 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 can you read me something? We hatched this plan that you would read a piece that reflects you.
Yes.
In the sense of actually reflects the character is the same age as you.
Yeah, age-wise.
That was our sort of gimmick. This is the USP of this Read Me Something You Love. So would you like to maybe introduce your choice?
Well, it's Tender as the Night. The character's Dick Diver. And hopefully the only thing we share is an age.
Chronic alcoholic, isn't he?
He is an alcoholic. And
I haven't read it, by the way, but I do know that of Dick, yes.
But he's probably even more of a tragic character than Gatsby. Dick survives the novel, whereas Gatsby doesn't survive The Great Gatsby, but in a way, Dick's fate is worse than Gatsby's. He'd almost be better off dead at the end of the book, you feel, rather than this fate of anonymity, which it's just terrible. This is a book which I would not advise you to read if you're feeling particularly low. This is a book which I've read many times over the years, and some years I just think I can't even. This is a book I've got to stay away from because it can be quite a traumatic read. But I think that's what makes it so good. Because it's not as perfect as Gatsby, but it's got more. I don't know. It's got more heart in it, I think, than Gatsby. I prefer Gatsby.
Because you were saying to me earlier that you read Gatsby about 30 times.
Oh, at least, I think, yeah. And once a year, at least, I will read it, and I've read it a few times in the same year before. I just love it. I never get bored of it. Tender as the Night, I've probably read about 10-ish times. It's in double figures, but I mean, it's a longer book, so it's a bit more demanding on time. But it's also, it's a bit of a mess structure wise, and the plot's a little all over the place.
So but, what do we need to know about the plot before we launch into this first passage?
Because
I haven't read it, so
right.
I'm a little bit lost plot wise.
Okay, so it's Dick Diver is a psychiatric doctor married to Nicole, is his wife, and she's got mental health issues herself. She began as a patient and she was molested by her father. Dick's about 10 years older than her, so there's that whole Freudian mess going on there. And at first read, Dick just seems like another Gatsby. He throws parties and gets drunk, and well, Gatsby didn't get drunk, but he's a charmer and everyone loves him. And as the book goes on, you realise it's all surface with him, and it just chips away. Mm-hmm. And the book starts, he's quite young, he's in his, I think he's 32 or something at the start of the book. Mm-hmm. And by the end he's 38 and he's he's taken quite a battering by the end of it.
And we're nearer to the end, aren't we?
Yeah, we're near the end.
He's in Rome with his wife, is that right?
Yep, and he's bumped into a character who's right at the start of the book, Rosemary, who's a young film starlet who was 18, I think, when they met at the start of the book.
Yeah.
And they nearly had an affair.
Okay, so they didn't actually consummate.
It wasn't consummated, but there's some heavy petting, as Fitzgerald would say. But yeah, it wasn't consummated, and she disappeared, and the divers went on doing their thing.
So he then met Nicole after this affair. Was Nicole already in the picture?
No, Nicole was already his wife.
Okay, I see. So
it starts on the French Riviera.
Okay.
The divers are there with all their friends. Okay. Yeah. And Rosemary arrives with her mum. They have a brief thing, nothing too serious, and then they go away. Yeah. And now it's 5 years later,
right.
And they meet again.
Okay, good. I think that's all that's all really pertinent for what we're going to read. Great, so if you're ready to do so,
yep.
Let's read.
At the desk, he suddenly stared and upped his head, as if a drink were acting on him, warming the lining of his stomach, throwing a flush up into his brain. He saw the person he had come to see, the person for whom he had made the Mediterranean crossing. Simultaneously, Rosemary saw him, acknowledging him before placing him. She looked back, startled, and, leaving the girl she was with, she hurried over. Holding himself erect, holding his breath, Dick turned to her. As she came across the lobby, her beauty all groomed, like a young horse dozed with black seed oil and hoofs varnished, shocked him awake. But it all came too quick for him to do anything except conceal his fatigue as best he could. To meet her starry-eyed confidence, he mustered an insincere pantomime, implying, "You would turn up here, of all the people in the world." Her gloved hands closed over his on the desk. "Dick, we're making the grandeur that was Rome. At least we think we are. We may quit any day." He looked at her hard, trying to make her a little self-conscious, so that she would observe less closely his unshaven face, his crumpled and slept-in collar. Fortunately, she was in a hurry. "We begin early because the mists rise at 11. Phone me at 2. In his room, Dick collected his faculties. He left a call for noon, stripped off his clothes, and dove literally into a heavy sleep. He slept over the phone call, but awoke at 2 refreshed. Unpacking his bag, he sent out suits and laundry. He shaved, lay for half an hour in a warm bath, and had breakfast. The sun had dipped into the Via Nazionale, and he let it through the portieres with a jingling of old brass rings. Waiting for a suit to be pressed, he tried to think about Rosemary. At first he thought nothing. She was young and magnetic, but so was Topsy, that's his child. He guessed that she had had lovers, and had loved them in the last 4 years. Well, you never knew exactly how much space you occupied in people's lives. Yet from this fog his affection emerged. The best contacts are when one knows the obstacles and still wants to preserve a relation. The past drifted back, and he wanted to hold her eloquent giving of herself in its precious shell, till he enclosed it, till it no longer existed outside him. He tried to collect all that might attract her. It was less than it had been 4 years ago. 18 might look at 34 for a rising mist of adolescence, but 22 would see 38 with discerning clarity. Moreover, Dick had been at an emotional peak at the time of the previous encounter. Since then, there had been a lesion of enthusiasm. When the valet returned, he put on a white shirt and collar and a black tie with a pearl. The cords of his reading glasses passed through another pearl of the same size that swung a casual inch below. After sleep, his face had resumed the ruddy brown of many Riviera suns, and to limber himself up, he stood on his hands on a chair until his fountain pens and coins fell out. At 3, he called Rosemary and was bidden to come up. Momentarily dizzy from his acrobatics, he stopped in the bar for a gin and tonic.
Great, thanks. So he's orchestrated this meeting, hasn't he?
Mm.
And I love this fact that you really get a strong sense of the discomfort that you have when you're pretending to be very blasé about something, but in fact it's all been sort of very carefully orchestrated.
But also, I think he's trying to hide. Because he goes on to say about the his unshaven face is crumpled and slept in collar. So I think, you know, it's all an act, and he's worried she's going to see past this.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know.
So it's a kind of a misdirection. Look at my hands so you don't then see my weary face.
Yeah, and hope she doesn't. If she looks through the gesture, she'll see the lesion of enthusiasm that lies beneath.
It seems a strange word to pair with.
But it's just been. There's less of it. It's
been cut away.
Yeah, it's
been scalpeled out of him in some sense. I'm just thinking lesion. I mean, lesion is a...
Yeah, it's a, the medical...
A cut, isn't it? Yeah.
And that would, I guess, refer to... I mean, he... Lesion crops up a few times in this novel, which I guess it's the medical imagery, because he's a doctor. Uh-huh. So Fitzgerald's probably playing with that.
Right.
And it's also... It's because his wife is also a patient.
Mm-hmm.
So if he is losing enthusiasm, it could be being cut away by Nicole, the amount of time he has to devote to her, or is he cutting it away himself from not being able to keep up this?
A kind of auto lesion, a sort of self-harming in a way, leeching of your own enthusiasm. Killing or killing it in yourself, I suppose, maybe with alcohol possibly as well.
Yeah.
Because that can also leech the life force, can't it?
Yeah, and just numb you as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, lesion is does crop up a few times, but I think that's a lovely... Because it just sticks in your... It's a nice turn of phrase, because it is unusual. And
I mean, even in this very, very short passage, there are some amazing... pieces of writing, amazing lines. I really like the description of her as well. As she came across the lobby, her beauty all groomed like a young horse dosed with black seed oil and hoops varnish shocked him awake. I just think it captures that sense when you are spellbound to somebody's physical beauty, but not even physical beauty, also inner beauty as well, but certainly here physical beauty.
I think it's just physical beauty with Dick and there's Rosemary. That...
But there is that sense, isn't there? Is a sense of just how vivid, in a way, she is. You know, all groomed like a young horse dosed with black seed oil. She's all sort of shining and sleek and shockingly alive.
Young, I guess.
And young as well.
Is the thing, young and...
And he's kind of crumpled.
Urgent. And... Yeah, she's got an urgency about him, which he no longer has at all.
Yeah. Because he's a very old man, isn't he? I mean, he's all of 38 years old, which is...
that's the prime, really. If anyone's a groomed young horse, I'd say it was Dick, but Fitzgerald, these were different times he was writing in. And also, I think he's at the edge of his nerves at this stage as well. The will's there, but the flesh is weak.
What do you think about his take on relationship age differences? Because he says here, doesn't he, again, this fantastic, fantastic line, I thought, 18 might look at 34 through a rising mist of adolescence, but 22... would see 38 with discerning clarity.
I know, it's brilliant. I think Fitzgerald knew what he was talking about there. Probably from experience.
What does 38 mean for you?
It's a lesion of enthusiasm.
Do you feel that lesion of enthusiasm?
No, I don't, actually. I probably feel more settled now than I have ever felt. But I'm very wary of saying things like that, because... Mm.
But you've also got a full head of hair.
Yes.
Which, you know, that means something. Well. In the... it does mean something. I don't know.
Well, that's not for me to say.
So for you, 38, it doesn't necessarily feel like a decreasing of your powers or of your attractiveness.
I don't know. I tend not to think of power.
I'm not talking about like kind of being able to walk through walls or anything.
No, I don't. I hope not. Not yet. I think you've got another decade, I think, before the
rot truly sets in.
Before that starts to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or another 20 years, maybe. I don't know. I think because I lead a lot more sedentary lifestyle now than I did even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a lot happier like that. So I don't... I agree. When I turned 35, I was a bit... Oh, gosh. But turning 38 didn't bother me because I think I just feel settled now. I don't know. I look at young people and think, oh, you know, let them get on with it. I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore. A night bus is just a terrible place to be, and I don't know. I'm quite happy going to bed early, and I know that my old lifestyle, I couldn't hack it for my mental health. So what I do now, everything I do is to make me happy.
Why don't you make me happy? And you see how I did that?
Yes,
very good. Why don't you make me happy and read us a bit more?
Some really depressing stuff. This is sometime after the meeting with Rosemary. Be still 38. She's still 24, is it? Yeah, 24, I think. And they've gone down to the beach. Rosemary's staying at the same hotel they are, or the same resort anyway, and they've gone down to the beach. The divers went out on the beach with her white suit and his white trunks, very white against the colour of their bodies. Nicole saw Dick peer about for the children among confused shapes and shadows of many umbrellas, and as his mind temporarily left her, ceasing to grip her, she looked at him with detachment and decided that he was seeking his children, not protectively, but for protection. Probably it was the beach he feared, like a deposed ruler secretly visiting an old court. She had come to hate his world with its delicate jokes and politeness, forgetting that for many years it was the only world open to her. Let him look at it, his beach, perverted now to the tastes of the tasteless. He could search it for a day and find no stone of the Chinese wall he had once erected around it, no footprint of an old friend. For a moment, Nicole was sorry it was so, remembering the glass he had raked out of the old trash heap, remembering the sailor trunks and sweaters they had bought in an east back street, garments that afterward ran through a vogue in silk among the Paris courtiers, remembering the simple little French girls climbing on the breakwaters, crying dit donc, like birds, and the ritual of the morning time, the quiet, restful extroversion towards sea and sun. Many inventions of his, buried deeper than the sand under the span of so few years. Now the swimming place was a club, though, like the international society it represented, it would be hard to say who was not admitted. Nicole hardened again as Dick knelt on the straw mat and looked about for Rosemary. Her eyes followed his, searching among the new paraphernalia, the trapezes over the water, the swinging rings, the portable bathhouses, the floating towers, the searchlights from last night's fetes, the modernistic buffet, wine with a hackneyed motif of endless handlebars. The water was almost the last place he looked for Rosemary, because few people swam any more in that blue paradise. Children, a one exhibitionistic valet who punctuated the morning with spectacular dives from a 50-foot rock. Most of Gauzy's guests stripped the concealing pyjamas from their flabbiness, only for a short hangover dip at 1 o'clock. "There she is," Nicole remarked. She watched Dick's eyes following Rosemary's track from raft to raft, but the sigh that rocked out of her bosom was something left over from 5 years ago. "Let's swim out and speak to Rosemary," he suggested. "You go. We'll both go." She struggled a moment against his pronouncement, but eventually they swam out together, tracing Rosemary by the school of little fish who followed her, taking their dazzle from her, the shining spoon of a trout hook. Nicole stayed in the water, while Dick hoisted himself up beside Rosemary, and the two sat dripping and talking, exactly as if they had never loved or touched each other. Rosemary was beautiful. Her youth was a shock to Nicole, who rejoiced, however, that the young girl was slender by a hairline than herself. Nicole swam around in little rings, listening to Rosemary, who was acting amusement, joy, and expectations, more confident than she had been 5 years ago. "I miss Mother so, but she's meeting me in Paris Monday." "5 years ago you came here," said Dick. "And what a funny little thing you were in one of those hotel peignoirs. how you remember things. You always did. And always the nice things. Nicole saw the old game of flattery beginning again, and she dove underwater, coming up again to hear. I'm going to pretend it's 5 years ago, and I'm a girl of 18 again. You could always make me feel some, kind of happy way, you and Nicole. I feel as if you're still on the beach there, under one of those umbrellas. The nicest people I'd ever known, maybe ever will. Swimming away, Nicole saw that the cloud of Dick's heartsickness had lifted a little as he began to play with Rosemary, bringing out his old expertness with people, a tarnished object of art. She guessed that with a drink or so he would have done his stunts on the swinging rings for her, fumbling through stunts he had once done with ease. She noticed that this summer, for the first time, he avoided high diving. Later, as she dodged away from raft to raft, Dick overtook her. Some of Rosemary's friends have a speedboat, the one out there. Do you want to aquaplane? I think it would be amusing. Remembering that once he could stand on his hands on a chair at the end of a board, she indulged him as she might have indulged Lanier. Last summer, on the Zuga Sea, they had played at that pleasant water game, and Dick had lifted a 200-pound man from the board onto his shoulders and stood up. But women marry all their husbands' talents, and naturally, afterwards, are not so impressed with them as they may keep up the pretense of being. Nicole had not even pretended to be impressed, though she had said yes to him, and, yes, I thought so too. She knew, though, that he was somewhat tired, that it was only the closeness of Rosemary's exciting youth that prompted the impending effort. She had seen him draw the same inspiration from the new bodies of her children, and she wondered coldly if he would make a spectacle of himself. The divers were older than the others in the boat. The young people were polite, deferential, but Nicole felt an undercurrent of, who are these numbers anyhow? And she missed Dick's easy talent of taking control of situations and making them all right. He had concentrated on what he was going to try to do. The motor throttled down 200 yards from shore, and one of the young men dove flat over the edge. He swam at the aimless twisting board, steadied it, climbed slowly to his knees on it, then got on his feet as the boat accelerated. Leaning back, he swung his light vehicle ponderously from side to side in slow, breathless arcs that rode the trailing side swell at the end of each swing. In the direct wake of the boat, he let go of his rope, balanced for a moment, then backflipped into the water, disappearing like a statue of glory and reappearing as an insignificant head while the boat made the circle back to him. Nicole refused her turn. Then Rosemary rode the board neatly and conservatively, with facetious cheers from her admirers. Three of them scrambled egotistically for the honour of pulling her into the boat, managing, among them, to bruise her knee and hip against the side. "Now you, Doctor," said the Mexican at the wheel. Dick and the last young man dove over the side and swam to the board. Dick was going to try his lifting trick, and Nicole began to watch with smiling scorn. This physical showing off for Rosemary irritated her most of all. When the men had ridden long enough to find their balance, Dick knelt and, putting the back of his neck in the other man's crotch, found the rope through his legs and slowly began to rise. The people in the boat, watching closely, saw that he was having difficulties. He was on one knee. The trick was to straighten all the way up in the same motion with which he left his kneeling position. He rested for a moment. Then his face contracted as he put his heart into the strain and lifted. The board was narrow. The man, though weighing less than 150, was awkward with his weight and grabbed clumsily at Dick's head. When, with a last wrenching effort of his back, Dick stood upright, the board slid sideways and the pair toppled into the sea. In the boat, Rosemary exclaimed, "Wonderful! They almost had it!" But as they came back to the swimmers, Nicole watched for a sight of Dick's face. It was full of annoyance, as she expected, because he had done the thing with ease only 2 years ago. The second time he was more careful. He rose a little, testing the balance of his burden, settled down again on his knee, then, grunting, "Alley-oop," began to rise. But before he could really straighten out, his legs suddenly buckled and he shoved the board away with his feet to avoid being struck as they fell off. This time, when the baby Gar came back, it was apparent to all the passengers that he was angry. "Do you mind if I try that once more?" he called, treading water. "We almost had it then." "Sure, go ahead." To Nicole, he looked white around the gills, and she cautioned him. "Don't you think that's enough for now?" He didn't answer. The first partner had had plenty and was hauled over the side. The Mexican driving the motorboat obligingly took his place. He was heavier than the first man. As the boat gathered motion, Dick rested for a moment, belly down on the board. Then he got beneath the man and took the rope, and his muscles flexed as he tried to rise. He could not rise. Nicole saw him shift his position and strain upward again, but the instant when the weight of his partner was full upon his shoulders, he became immovable. He tried again, lifting an inch, 2 inches. Nicole felt the sweat glands of her forehead open as she strained with him. Then he was simply holding his ground. Then he collapsed back down on his knees with a smack, and they went over, Dick's head barely missing a kick of the board. "Hurry back," Nicole called to the driver. Even as she spoke, she saw him slide under the water, and she gave a little cry. But he came up again and turned on his back, and the Mexican swam near to help. It seemed forever till the boat reached them, but when they came alongside it at last, and Nicole saw Dick floating exhausted and expressionless, alone with the water and the sky, her panic changed suddenly to contempt. "We'll help you. Doctor, get his foot. All right, now, all together." Dick sat panting and looking at nothing. "I knew you shouldn't have tried it," Nicole could not help saying. "He had tired himself the first 2 times, said the Mexican. "It was a foolish thing," Nicole insisted. Rosemary, tactfully, said nothing. After a minute, Dick got his breath, panting. "I couldn't have lifted a paper doll that time." An explosive little laugh relieved the tension caused by his failure. They were all attentive to Dick as he disembarked at the dock, but Nicole was annoyed. Everything he did annoyed her now.
"Great, thank you. What kind of stands out for you in that section?"
What I like about this section is, I mean, I think it's fantastic writing for a start, because it's sustained description of a small act. You know, he's just trying to balance, and it goes on for a few pages, and which, you know, is that's quite a tricky thing to pull off, and he does it really well. And the fact is, you only get it from Nicole's point of view, I think. It's very effective, because you get the implication of what it must be like for Dick. And I think it's quite tactful of Fitzgerald. He's kind of stepping away from Dick, and in some ways that's worse. You know, you really see it through the eyes of his wife.
You feel his shame and his embarrassment, yeah, though, don't you? All the way through.
Exactly. And it's not just his wife, it's Rosemary, his lover, you know, faux lover, or the girl he's trying to impress. He's trying to impress probably both women and the lads on the
exactly,
boat,
yeah.
And he just can't do it.
And it's you sort of get the sense that, and I don't know if he gets the sense, that she really is out of his league. I mean, what gave me that feeling was this fantastic line, which I think is really funny as well, where they see Rosemary and they swam out together, tracing Rosemary by the school of little fish who followed her, taking their dazzle from her. You know, the shining spoon of a trout hook. There's just the sense that she is really this sort of glorious vision, and everything, including fish, are attracted to her beauty.
They are now more like the people in the earlier paragraph who take a short hangover dip at 1 o'clock, which I think is also a lovely
yeah, you
phrase.
Really Yeah, you really get this feel of their kind of lumpiness, and particularly,
Dick,
of course,
Dick so much, not Nicole.
Yes, yes,
it's Dick's this struggling to. Dick rested for a moment, belly down on the board. That's just the river of that. It's got quite a heavy feel to it.
belly down
on the board. And it's quite excruciating to read. Nicole just getting more and more irritated by this display going on.
And that comes out also, doesn't it, in that line where he says, Fitzgerald says, mirroring, as you say, Nicole's point of view, women marry all their husband's talents and naturally afterwards are not so impressed with them as they may keep up the pretense of being. Nicole had not even pretended to be impressed, though she had said yes to him. And yes, I thought so too. And I think there's something quite depressing, for want of a better word, about that. That sense that, you know, all of the preening and strutting that goes on to bring couples together is in some way artificial. And then they get married and then maybe they can... just let that all go. It's and then like, they maybe discover they don't really even like each other.
It's like Woody Allen says in, is it Play It Again, Sam, where she says, you know, you were a lot more exciting when we first met. And he goes, well, that was the dating period. You know, I was pursuing you. I couldn't keep up that level of interest in this. Yeah. I would have had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And it's just the same thing, isn't it?
Exactly. It's sort of that sense of, you know, he's sort of let himself go, because that's another thing you know that couples sometimes do, don't they? That they're all, they all go to the gym and they get themselves sort of fighting fit.
But I think Dick's problem is that he hasn't let himself go. Tension wise, he's constantly trying to keep up this face of how he was, where he hasn't been able to relax into how he is, which he should be able to with his wife, and he hasn't been able to do that. The sad thing is, when Rosemary was interested in him, like it's the 18 looking at a 22-year-old thing again, and now she can see him, well, with that discerning clarity, as it says, and there's the example of it. But there's one other little bit I'd like to read, which is a similar, this is my favourite little passage in the whole book, and I think it sums up why Dick is ultimately such a heartbreaking character for me anyway. I find, and it's the same looking, you're seeing it from Nicole's view. Approaching noiselessly, she saw him behind his cottage, sitting in a steamer chair by the cliff wall, and for a moment she regarded him silently. He was thinking, he was living a world completely his own, and in the small motions of his face, the brow raised or lowered, the eyes narrowed or widened, the lips set and reset, the play of his hands, she saw him progress from phase to phase of his own story, springing out inside him, his own, not hers. Once he clenched his fists and leaned forward. Once it brought into his face an expression of torment and despair. When this passed, its stamp lingered in his eyes. For almost the first time in her life, she was sorry for him.
Yeah.
And that's where I've shed tears reading this. And that's the passage that always sets me off. It's just, again, it's almost like Fitzgerald can't go there. You can't, it'd be too much to know what Dick is going through at that period. And she's only going by looking at his face. She's not saying he's remembering this incident and that incident. It's just, he's remembering his life and occasionally.
Yeah. Seeing his inner world playing out through his features, which we all do. I mean, I don't know if you've ever kind of found yourself walking along and you catch sight of yourself in a shop window or something, and you're in the middle of gurning. I mean, I can only describe what kind of gurning. You've got some strange look on your face. You think, God, I'm probably walking around like this all the time.
Yeah, I've been told that. Anyway.
But isn't that... people are doing that.
But Dick doesn't. It's the thing. He doesn't.
When you say... because he's trying to suppress he's trying to keep that under
his whole
wraps.
Life. So this is him. She's seen him now. He thinks he's been unobserved.
Right.
And he's let his guard down. And she hasn't seen him like that before.
Yes.
And she's watching him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know he's being watched.
Yeah.
And she can actually see the despair there. And it's this for the first time in her life. Mm. You know, she felt sorry for him, which is something I don't think you would have got in Gatsby. As much as I think Gatsby's the greater novel, I think this goes further with, you know, getting to the heart of things. And he's building himself up for this big crash, or the big die. I mean, it's all in his name as well, which is...
Diver, yes. And I remember from the last passage, he dives into sleep, doesn't he? Into oblivion, into, and presumably maybe he dives into alcohol as well.
Yes, he does. He does.
It's just something about Fitzgerald. He is special, isn't he?
He is.
You know.
I mean, this thing, this book, I think this has got more of Fitzgerald in it than Gatsby. I mean, Dick Diver is Fitzgerald, basically. And Nicole, I guess, would be Zelda.
Well, it's definitely going on my to-read list, so thank you.
Thank you.